Welcome back, party people.
Hey.
It's another episode of the Chips and Bits podcast.
Traveler's edition.
Traveling edition. I'm your host this month, Matthew Anderson, currently coming to you from Berkeley, California. And with me as always,
Kenny Myers, also coming to you from Berkeley, California, but a separate room.
Oh, so we're now in the same place, unlike normal, but a different place than we both lived.
Yeah.
Interesting. Interesting. In the continuing adventures of the Chips and Bits podcast, we...
We're just worldwide now.
The work never stops. So, you know, when we're busy travelers, the podcast must go on. The show must continue.
And, you tried to stop it. I just want to point out to everyone. You tried to stop it, and I was like, nay, Matt. It's the one thing in my life that's consistent. Is that Monday release? Not even like the podcast schedule, but just that when we do the podcast, it's that Monday release. And it's the only thing I'm holding myself to.
Well, to be clear, all I tried to do was push it from 7 a.m. to some other time on Monday after I got home. But that's fine. We're here now. I'm sure everyone that's listening right this second is very excited that Kenny managed to talk me into podcasting via AirPods in an Airbnb.
Yeah. And to be quite honest, I'm in Beats Pros with hotel Wi-Fi. So the chance of this completely crashing and burning midstream is very high.
Plus, thematically, I do feel a little bit like I'm in a cocoon, Kenny.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, let's explore that.
And that music, I feel like I'm coming out of a cocoon.
Oh, God. You doubled down. I really thought that I did a great job. That was one of my favorite segs that we've ever done, and you just shit on it.
I've just realized that another one of my favorite things about this podcast is that it brings this sense of normalcy to our to our communication, and it lulls me into a fake sense of thinking that I kind of expect your sense of humor now and know what you're going to say at all times, and you still catch me off guard every once in a while.
It's pure joy to get a really good Matt laugh, which that did, and it's what I strive for pretty much solely because, you know, this podcast audience is the same, so you know it's pretty much just you and me. And our friends who have been wonderful, like there's quite a few of you, more than I would expect, that would stay around this long, which I'm very grateful for. But let's talk about Cocoon, Matthew.
Cocoon
was a game where it was one of those games where I sent you a text and I said, "Have you heard of Cocoon?" And you said, "No." And I'm like, you need to play Cocoon. Well, it's podcast about Cocoon. He's like, well, I need to see what it's about first because you're Matt and you're boring these days. And you responded back immediately. You're like, yep. That, you know, and you're like, well, we're playing Cocoon.
Yeah.
Now, Matt, what is your take on Cocoon? I feel like you should drive this one since Helldivers was just so much me.
Well, conveniently with this one, I mean, I think we have to start in a place that's just a favorite of ours to start with, and that is the art direction. Start with the art direction. Part of what, you know, instantly convinced me that this would be a game that we were going to and should play is just the look and the feel, the vibe. Yeah. You know, you get it from the trailer, and then you start the game, and the vibe matches the trailer, and it just continues all the way through to the finish of the game. The feel is somehow like, you know, a bunch of other games that you've played in your life. And yet they did find, you know, a little unique niche in both the presentation and then mainly in one of the primary game mechanics of, you know, switching, jumping between worlds through this little this little ball thing. Like you pick up these little orbs, and then you realize the orbs contain worlds, and you can go in and out of the orbs, kind of like a snow globe effect. And that,
if I may interrupt you, real quick, one thing that's really interesting in talking about those games, and I just wanted to touch upon it real quick, is my belief, and of course we do tons of research for this podcast, is that this stems from the people who made Journey and Insight. Like this is from that school of people, and from that company. Is made by some of the people from the company that made Journey. And like, I feel like they have developed, even spread to different game companies, their own language of game communication that, you know, while in different areas, still feels like they're pulling at that same thread. Continue, sir.
Pretty much at the end there. It's got a unique flair. And one thing I know that we both appreciate is, you know, there's games that have good graphics. There's even games that have a creative aesthetic. But it's not really necessarily woven then into the world that's created around it. So it's like, cool, it looks cool, but, you know, lots of games look cool.
It's XCOM the Bureau. It looks cool, but it's XCOM the Bureau.
You know, one where we would disagree. Might be like Deathloop, you know, where it's like that had also an aesthetic. And I kind of liked how it was sort of how it was perceived within the world. You kind of found it boring and disjointed and didn't connect to the world. So every once in a while you'll get a game where it's like, it's great. It looks great, but it doesn't necessarily do the weaving thing. And I thought this did an excellent job at that. I felt like it was super cohesive from the time I picked up my controller to the time they put it down.
Yeah, I thought the aesthetics of this game were unbelievably good. And, you know, it was beautiful and it still like maintained an indie feel to it, you know, like working with what they had, they made something really beautiful. They made four distinctive worlds. Five? Okay. It felt really good. They also, in this game, they have bosses, which actually felt hilariously, bosses, one of the oldest gaming concepts, felt like a new puzzle thing in this game. You know, it felt like, oh, this type of game has bosses. Like, it feels like you're talking about, like, it was kind of this kind of game, but then also like, oh, they're actually like really interesting boss fights. They're super fun. And then they're very like annoying in a lot of ways because they will just end the boss fight as like, it's a puzzle in almost a Dark Souls ways. And I am not saying this is Souls-like in any way whatsoever. I just want to be clear. But literally, like, it's one hit, you're out of the puzzle. They just literally, the bosses will throw you out of the puzzle.
I found it to be incredibly Souls-like. No.
That's your Souls-like.
I will say I found, you know, the fact that there were boss fights unique as well, but I don't think for a very good reason. Like I remember the first couple of encounters, it was like you're playing an exploration / puzzle game,
yeah.
And then you encounter this thing, and immediately like this looks like a boss,
yeah.
And what your brain does is goes, how the fuck are they going to do a boss in this game? Like, what am I going to do? with this? So it felt a little bit like that part felt a little bit weird. And like I wasn't sure it was going to fit into the game, and it did, but you know, it did trip me up the first couple times.
I mean, it is essentially just another puzzle. I mean, there is some timing involved. It's a timing puzzle, but it is just another puzzle. I mean, one might say all boss fights are just puzzles, really. One of the things that they do actually that's really cool is essentially when you unlock a world or something, as a part of that unlocking, you get these orbs. And when you get the orb for that world, you also unlock the boss in a very cool little animated sequence. Like, what is that? That one game, the adventure game that built by this French guy in like the 80s that has like really cool vector graphics. God, it's on the tip of my tongue. It just has really cool, I would describe this like vectory style bosses, right? Like a lot of their limbs and stuff are very like pointy vectory. That's going to kill me.
Hold on, I'm just making a note here. Pointy vectory.
I'm going to Google it, but I don't know if my internet can handle it. So, Matt, you keep talking. If I cut out, French game, right, well, vector, adventure.
Well, while Kenny's on that, and since we've covered the art direction, why don't I just tangent us into how I really dislike this game?
I just knew this was coming.
Boy, did I dislike this game.
I knew this because of your taste, and I knew because of how you responded to it, and you're like, we'll talk about it in the podcast. Tell me, please, because I really love this game.
Yes, I'll tell you. I think the easiest slash best way to describe my distaste for it was probably related to the games that you referenced. You know, like there are some games out there, like Journey is a perfect example, where part of playing the game is you kind of just get thrown into it. You don't know what it's going to be. There's a lot of exposition, and you have to learn how to play the game, what the game's about, what the mechanics are, how to solve puzzles through doing them the first couple times.
Yeah.
And this game does that. And it's a thing that you and I have both loved and appreciated when done well in previous games. I like when a game doesn't handhold you, when there's not a lot of instruction. This also takes that to the level of like UI. There's no UI or text or anything that tells you you have to figure it out. And usually I love that. What I felt about this game was that the entire thing was that. Like the entire game felt like a tutorial from the time that I started playing it and the first time I learned the mechanic until the very end where you get to the last puzzle. I felt like it was just like, okay, cool. Teach me another thing that I do. And then where I really felt like they dropped the ball was there's only one puzzle in this whole game that I thought was kind of challenging. The rest of them were no, it was like the second or third to last one. Mm-hmm. Otherwise they're so sequential in how they build upon themselves that since you just learned the last mechanic, they very rarely pulled like an Arrested Development style. Oh, remember that puzzle mechanic we taught you in the very first level that you haven't used in like four levels? You got to pull that from the recesses of your brain. It's like, no, I just used these five mechanics. Here's this sixth one. I bet the next puzzle uses 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I just have to figure out what order they go in. So that's my like short synopsis of like, I just felt like I was like, cool, when is this tutorial going to end? And I'm actually going to start playing this game.
Do you remember what I texted you after you were finished?
Something about how, like, I love when a game teaches you how to whatever. And I was like, I love when a game's not just a teaching mechanic.
I thought that that happened really organically. And it felt really like it's so funny. I love this game for the exact same reason. And for the fact, like, that you hated this game. And for the fact that they did it without...
I didn't hate it. I just really disliked it.
That, like, your favorite game of all time, which is Paper Mario, where they're just like, grab the button! You know? Which is explicitly tutorial after tutorial, tutorial, right? But this doesn't, like, explicitly do anything like that. It literally just gives you the world and you go through and... It felt to me like attaining new levels of knowledge, and to the point where the last puzzles involved like jumping and storing between different worlds and like jumping back and forth. And like using the different elements of the different worlds to get different balls. Like essentially you was literally juggling spheres, balls, juggling balls to get them to a certain point. And it would be jump, and those balls were worlds. So you jump into the world to store a ball, and then you'd have to put them in the reverse order and put that ball on like a single thing. And I felt like they built to that so naturally and at such a good pace that I was like, this is incredible. Like what, like it sounds to me what you want is like the challenge level at the end of Jonathan Blow's last game, you know, where it's like you have a timed puzzle solving mechanism where you just have to use all these things to open the door, because it just felt so, like, I was like, oh yeah, like maybe this is just like just a matter of IQ. Like, I'm so stupid that I was like, I just learned something and I applied it. And you were just like, I knew this and I knew what, like, this feels like fine. Like, I just thought that was so, and particularly because they just don't, it's just such a part of gameplay. I felt like that's so hard to do and so impressive. I'm so surprised that you didn't feel the same, that you were just like, well, I've learned A through B and the next puzzle as add C. And so like the next answer is going to be C. Like, I'm disappointed that there's this kerning, but that's like, they just did it so seamlessly, I felt.
Yeah. I don't disagree with anything that you said.
But you just this is not like how that make you felt? Like,
no, this isn't as bad as Paper Mario.
Okay.
By a mile.
Which is a tutorial game mixed with another.
That doesn't make it good, though. That doesn't make it good. And the way that they taught you how to use the mechanics was organic. And I think they did an excellent job. I had no issue learning the mechanics.
Yeah.
And I didn't have an issue with how they actually taught them to me. I think, to be more specific about my experience, I think the level of puzzle solving required for each mechanic, I think they went way too micro with it. A comparison that I think was a good job of that is a game like Portal, right? Where it's like, they teach you one thing. It's like, hey, you can shoot a portal, it makes another portal, you go through it. Then they don't just go, now you can also fire this laser, and you can also do that. They don't just stack them on top of each other. They kind of spread them out, and they explore all of the different possible things you can do with one of those mechanics.
Yeah.
Then they layer another one on, and they commonly use them out of order. So by the time you're getting to the end of the game, you're like, this could be one of 12 things stacked in multiple, and I might actually have to learn a new one here. So your brain's always firing and trying to figure it out. Whereas this one, it was too small. Like the deltas between each mechanic were too small. You typically only solved one puzzle and then kept going through a world, and that world followed that mechanic through to its conclusion. And then It was like new world, new mechanic, all still slow again. And the only thing it ever did was use the first mechanic plus the second mechanic. It very rarely just used some, like, threw you for a loop. It was like, new mechanic, here we go. So that's really what my issue was. I felt like the deltas between them were too small. The puzzles were then too simplistic with the mechanic that you used.
Yeah.
And then the game is short. So it's like, you get through all of that and you're like, cool, learn a mechanic, did a thing, game over. It just wasn't enough. Funny.
Like, all these, like, it's so rare that, like, it's rare that one of the things you truly dislike about a game is the exact, I have the exact opposite feeling of. Usually this is just like, usually it's you saying, yeah, I could see why you think, you know, Helldivers did this or something like that. Or like why you think Infinite, you know, the presentation, blah, blah, blah. But this, it's so rare where we land on something where that was like the fact that each world has its own puzzle, and then it eventually the last puzzle was like, here's the payoff of everything you've learned. I thought, and that's how I felt, how they did it. It was the payoff of everything you learned, which they start teasing at in the last world. And then it ends. I was like, oh, that not only did it feel like the game was, that kept the flow of the game going. Like there wasn't too many puzzle breaks. Every once in a while, it hit something that I got stuck on. Usually it was actually finding where the puzzle is, which, you know, that was my maybe one gripe, is that sometimes the design of the world was like beautiful, but like hard to find pathways in sometimes. But I actually love that they sort of like, here are all these different devices. And at the end, they're like, now use all these devices to solve it. Because I felt that each device was fun within its own world to solve. And they do add the layer of, I feel it's unfair to say that the second spheres or like the additional spheres, they do come into play in those additional worlds quite a bit.
But only through hopping.
No, not always, but generally, yes. I would say the majority through hopping, but like, sometimes there would be platforms and stuff that would only open up, or the liquid, like up and down, that required use in like later worlds. But it wasn't, you're right, it wasn't the majority of the puzzles, but it was in there. And I just felt like that it's like, it's just like all dopamine hits all the way to the, like the ultimate dopamine hit of making you think you're the smartest, bestest bug on the planet who will become the new bug god. And I just
I did like the whatever that story was. Like I liked the culmination of sort of like.
And also, as with these games, which I don't even like journey likes, is what I would call them or something.
Journey like games.
I would say the sound, like the music and sound, is always fantastic. Sound is
so good.
It's so good. They always use this like dissonant EDM like background music. Like it's not even just electronic like wave synth music that you're just like, yeah. You're just like, I'm a bug, and I'm moving balls.
They also use that though for like the mix. So there's a good and a bad to the world switching mechanic. One of the good things is what you were just talking about, which the sound design of switching between spheres, snow globes, comes with this, like, it's hard to describe it. It's almost like if you dropped something funky into sand.
Yeah.
It's like you go through this thing and it's like, and it like has this thuddy, sandy sound, and every time you do it, it's like, oh, it's so good. It also takes a while to do it, and so it's like you hold down the button. It's like every time you're like, boom, I switched over. Now I get it. You're loading another world. It's cool.
Yeah.
But there's two puzzles in particular where it's like you have to do. You probably switch spheres like a dozen times, and you're just waiting to go back and forth between the things to pick up the sphere. I'm like, oh my god.
Complaint. Like it was very much like because it is a really cool effect and. You do eventually get sick of it because of the speed, but it never stops looking cool. But the speed is just debilitating because there are puzzles that require you to jump multiple times backwards through multiple worlds. And it's probably like a 10, 15 second, like it's not short. And then if you fuck up, which you start to at the end, you're just like, oh, hold on. And then you're
The orb in the other
And you're like, this is cool, but like, can I just hit A? You know, like I have an SSD.
Back to green
can
world,
you make this faster? So that is, you know, I didn't even think of it this way, but I think you're right. Like they have to account for non-SSD computers that need to load worlds. It was pretty awesome though in that regard. But yeah, it's so interesting. Like I understand why you might just be like you wanted them to play around more with like a red, like, I don't know, some sort of trick in the middle of these things.
I thought the best world and the best sort of like, drawing out of the mechanic is the second world where you get the green orb and you can change the between solid and water.
Yeah.
That's the sort of thing that I'm alluding to is that, like what they use that for is first they use it as a barrier and you learn, oh, cool. I can walk through certain walls that are like this. Then you also learn if I'm standing on something and I change it to solid, it lifts me. So it also acts like an elevator. There's like dimensions to that mechanic and it's a whole world where there's like lots of different, levels of the puzzle solving with that one mechanic. And they sort of tip it on its head a couple of different times until you get to the end. And then there's a timing-based version of it where, like, if you're standing somewhere but you switch it, then you have to go back and switch it again to get it.
Yeah.
You know, that's the best version of it that I can point at. The rest of them just felt like they weren't meaty enough to facilitate entire worlds. And I just kind of walked through them. And then, even to the point you alluded to, I thought that, like, again, I think it was the second or the third to last puzzle where you're on that last world and you're having to – you had to like move a platform and then drop a sphere in a certain location. And since you were in that location already, that's when you learned the mechanic of picking up a sphere in the world that you're already in, teleports you to the sphere in that world. And you'd never done that before. And you had to go back and forth and move the spheres around. That one was complex and very difficult to figure out.
Yeah.
The rest of them I didn't feel were very complex. And then the final one wasn't even I've taught you all the things, use all these things at once. All it was, all the final puzzle was, okay, can you figure out where to put the spheres in the different worlds to stack them inside themselves like a Russian doll and be done with it? Like, it was just a simple stacking puzzle. And I was like, dude, there's all these things we could use for like a final mega puzzle. And they didn't even do it. So yeah, it just felt like a little bit of a letdown. And especially because of all the things that I think were super good about the game.
It's so funny because I was like, it's like the new form of puzzle. I was like, this is like the ultimate meta puzzle to this puzzles game. Like, I think it's great. Like it's essentially like, here's the concept of this game is go to the worlds. And then it's essentially like zooming out and being like, oh yes. And now the worlds in their order, the Russian doll, which I think is a really good metaphor for that last puzzle. I was just like, oh yeah, now the worlds are in worlds and you unlock and you become Superbug or Galaga Superbug or
whatever. Superbug.
There is Galactabug. There was that weird ending with the I had forgotten about that to this moment. The bullet hell space shooter that you become to defeat is that final boss. That is just so weird. It was really funny and out of nowhere. I like that about it, but anyway. So like, where do we land on this, Matt?
I think, you know, this game is certainly not like offensive in any way.
It's not long. It's like 5 hours.
It's also not long.
It's like a great Saturday game day game, I feel.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think even though I have, you know, I wound up with a distaste for it, certainly I would say like, it's a game that everyone probably has the time to experience and make their own mind up about. I wouldn't talk anybody out of not playing this game.
Plus, it's like a really great Steam Deck game or like on your Switch or something. I don't think it's on the Switch. It might be on the Switch. But it's just like, I don't know. You can kind of hop in and pop out and not really miss anything in that regard. It's essentially just settling puzzle next. But I really loved Cocoon. I'm glad you played it. And I'm glad it was short enough that I didn't get a bunch of text messages from you. I have memories of some of those games. So next up, we're going to do Persona 5 Royal. 120 hours, baby.
Yeah, well, you know, you heard it here first. Kenny likes juggling balls.
Yeah, I love playing with those balls, hopping right in them. Mm-hmm. Become a super bug.
What is the next game we're going to podcast about? I forget.
It's Senua.
That's right. Hellblade 2. No, it's not.
Yes, it is. Don't listen to them.
Yeah, okay.
Sorry to everyone's ears.
we'll leave you there with some wonderful Kenny regurgitation voices. thank you for listening. Thank you for listening. I've been your host this month, Matthew Anderson. With me in the same city, but at a different computer,
is Kenny Myers. That's me.
And we love you as always. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you again next month.
Bye.